This is Team Liquid Radio, sponsored by Nobody.
Hey, we're here with Carmack, who's the director of Intel Extreme Masters Global Challenge, and they'll be holding a tournament in Kyiv this coming weekend. So hey, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Not bad. Are you in Ukraine yet?
Yes, I'm in Ukraine right now, chilling out in the hotel across the street from the venue. It's wonderful. Kevin Home Alone style weather outside. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, so this is your first event, your first IM event of 2012. So like, how are your feelings going into this one?
I think it's actually going to be a really, really great event. Our European events have always been much better than our other events for one reason or another. Kyiv will be great, I think, for the audience watching. For the audience watching at home, simply because it's held in an internet cafe, all the facilities are there already. Players will come and will be very, very comfortable. In between games, they can walk like literally 10 feet and get a hamburger or something. And the streaming should be lots of fun as well. So I'm hoping it's going to be a phenomenal event, not just for StarCraft, but for Counter-Strike and League of Legends as well.
Yeah, the Eastern European esports scene, I guess at least for StarCraft 2 fans, we don't know much about it. Like, what's it like? You're from Poland and all.
I think it's very, very underappreciated. I do have a theory that most of the hype around all esports players is carried in English language. Therefore, Reddit, Twitter, and Team Liquid naturally are extremely powerful tools. And because Eastern Europe doesn't generally communicate too much in English, then the hype doesn't really, break that boundary. But in the qualifiers, actually, I've listed lots of player names on Twitter of those players that haven't managed to qualify for Kyiv, among them Stefano and Haypro and many, many other players. And those guys that qualified have actually really, really earned it. And I do think still they are very underappreciated, and probably not all of them, but one or two of them will definitely raise an eyebrow this week.
So what do you think of the chances of, say, the Ukrainians going to this tournament? You invited some really strong Korean players this time around. How do you think it'll go?
It's tough to say. Home advantage is always something one shouldn't underestimate. The Koreans and Nani will be jet-lagged, so is QXC going to be, and Killer from Chile. So certainly players with a home advantage will be likely to do better than others. But CAS has always been disappointing on LAN, except for that World Cyber Games bronze medal. Maybe that has been his breakthrough tournament, but Mr. Bitter in Rotterdam have been talking to me for months and months how awesome CAS is, and I've never really seen it. So I'm gonna be cautious about CAS. Strelok is very, very solid, but I don't see him going farther than the quarterfinals, actually. Dimaga, obviously, my doppelganger, certainly a player that could break into the top four. But I would be a big liar if I didn't say that MMA is the favorite of the tournament.
Yeah, you were at Home Story Cup for the last 2 days or so, and you saw as Koreans dominate that tournament after, I guess, the foreigners made a good comeback in the last quarter of 2011. But then first tournament start 2012, Koreans just kill everyone. So like, where do you think we are at right now, like Korea versus the world? Where do you think we're at?
There are many, many foreign players at a very high level, and that level is not so different from good Korean players, but there are numbers-wise way more good Korean players than there are foreign players. But the skill difference is not that high, in my opinion.
Okay, but you're still going to pick MMA to win.
If that makes any sense.
All right.
Yeah, of course. MMA has proven, results-wise, MMA has proven to be consistently one of the best players in the game globally. So,
okay,
I have to say MMA is certainly the favorite on paper.
All right. Well, you saw kind of what happened at Home Story Cup, where everyone was excited, but the peak of the tournament in terms of excitement actually was the round of eight, where Demaga was the last runner of the four foreigners, and once it broke down into, like, you know, Korean top six, you admit that the tournament, you know, people lost interest. So as an organizer, it's something you have to be concerned with. So, like, ideally, like, what's your, like, top four, your semifinal bracket look like then?
To get players to watch, certainly I would like to see somebody like, you know, in general, it's about relevance. You need to provide people who are relevant for the fans to enjoy the games. It's as simple as that. I mean, nobody denies that. The Home Story Cup semifinalists have basically earned their spots in those semifinals, but at the same time, people would rather see Demaga there because he's more relevant to them, and they have more reasons to cheer for Demaga because they know him better. So for that reason, I think obviously Naniwa versus Zinho would be a big game for a semifinal, an absolutely big game. Obviously any Team Liquid player will be very, very, very supported by fans, and it's for Zinho's first appearance on a foreign tournament. And then another semi-final I would personally like to see would be, let me think, Demaga versus MMA.
All right. I guess...
These would be the fan favorites. I think not many people could find better pairings than I.
That's true. That's a huge group of stars. Well, I guess it's a good way to change the topic because, you know, on the topic of being fair versus going for a lot of viewers, it's something that we've talked about in the past, but it's something that IAM has done differently from a lot of the major tournaments in 2011. So let's start with something we talked about before. You don't have invites to your tournaments except for the four Koreans. Why is that?
The Koreans generally are... As a principle, we've decided to try to give everyone a chance because I personally think that in order for StarCraft II as an esport, in order for that game to have longevity, we need to build a system where we allow the background players, so to speak, the so-called background players, to earn experience and earn some glory, maybe get attention of a sponsor and become better later on. I would like these players to be able to shine through, which is why we have our qualification system. And sometimes, in terms of the streaming numbers, we suffer because of that. Because obviously, I'd rather see, for example, as a guy who wants to have a big stream, I'd like to see players like Heypro, Stefano, White Ra, and many others above, let's say, Killer from Chile, Targa from Norway, Feast from Belgium, right? But a player like Feast has beaten, if memory serves me correctly, 17 players to get to Kiev. So you couldn't say he didn't earn it. As regards Koreans, it's no secret that it's tougher, way tougher for them to get to foreign events simply because of the sponsorships that they don't really have. And also the Code A schedules are really, really tough. So it's logistically a big nightmare to hold a qualifier because even though you have some kind of a pecking order, then half of the players down that pecking order, they don't have sponsorships, and the other half has got a Code S, Code A schedule conflict with the GSL. Therefore, we invite players directly, although we would rather not. We would rather have qualifiers, and my aim for the future actually is to have qualifiers, and every player that wins a qualifier or wins a slot through a qualifier gets minimum a hotel bed completely free of charge from the Intel Extreme Masters. I think that's a big piece of the puzzle where we allow people like BeastieQT, Titan, Killer, and all the other players who are not as well known to actually break through and start beating players like Idra, who are already sponsored, and you know, Team Liquid, Team EG, Fnatic and others are able to afford to play to send players everywhere, but not everybody has that comfort, and we would like to provide that comfort to as many players as possible.
So it kind of seems like, in the name of making a more competitive environment, you're kind of doing things that are bad for business. You know, at the end of the day, these tournaments, they are a business. So, like, what do you think about this kind of situation you're in, where you have to make decisions that might impact you bad in a, you know, viewer's business way, but you're doing things that are good for competition?
We don't really have the pressure to perform amazingly, amazingly, amazingly today. We have the opportunity to work with one of the best and most patient sponsors in the business, which is Intel. Which is not to say they are unhappy with us or anything, or that our results are bad, but we're thinking more further down the road than today's results. I mean, what happens if suddenly Idra quits, Stefano quits, and Whitera quits? Who's going to replace them? I mean, where are we going to get these guys? We need to help produce these guys, and that's what we're doing. And I think what we do is an investment into the future of esports. As grand as it sounds, I think it's actually to a large extent true.
At the same time, do you think like what you're doing is helping in that aspect in terms of creating new stars? Because if we look at your tournaments in the past, early on in 2010, you had a few guys who won the IEMs who became stars. But at least for the 2011 season, your winners are guys like Puma, who's already established, DRG, who's already established, kind of. And even if you have qualifiers and these guys like Dignitas Killer come up, or guys like you said, like Targa, they come up, it's not like, so they beat the qualifiers, not many people watch qualifiers, they play in the group stage, they get knocked out early, and they get through qualifiers, they qualify, and then that's it. So like, do you really think you're doing such a great job in terms of, in that aspect, creating new stars?
It's not that we want to create new stars like directly overnight, and it doesn't happen overnight. How long did it take Huck from his first live event in Cologne in 2010 in August to actually win his very first major event? It took him quite a while, right? He had to pick up some more GGs to pick up some more skills later on, and that's what these players need, I think. Players like Killer, who he's been performing fairly consistently, and with every Intel Extreme Masters event, he performs a little bit better every next step. And, for example, Elfitaya also is a decent example of a player who really made it far in an Intel Extreme Masters tournament, arguably a fairly decently stacked one. In China, he got second place. So it's not actually about creating the biggest superstar that Reddit would get excited about. Obviously, that would be very, very pleasant for us. But it's about making sure that this large number of players right behind the very top has a goal to play for, because they're obviously not going to challenge for top three places at every single event in their first appearance, but they have to pick up their experience somewhere.
Okay, well, you expressed your praise for Home Story Cup and what they did for getting player personalities out there. So, you know, if a player can't perform well, at least they can, you know, let people know what kind of person they are. So, IEM, do you guys plan to implement some aspects of that in some way?
Yes, we do. It all comes down to our logistics capabilities, to our current setup at the event and things like that. But we very often had in the past, which may have been overlooked, players coming in for interviews, extensive interviews, players coming in to commentate. Last year in Kiev, we had lots of players come in and commentate for Kiev, but obviously 1 year is a very, very long time in esports, and people probably don't remember that event anymore. Long story short, yes, every single event is not just us, but every single event needs a more player personality, needs to, it's obviously casters are big stars, but players need to be extremely attractive for an audience as well.
So what do you think is reasonable for a tournament like IEM to do in that case? Home Story Cup, obviously just the way it's set up, it's really easy for players just to come sit in the caster booth and cast games. Like, what do you think the best thing that's reasonable that you can do for players?
Well, we are kind of limited also in the way that we run three tournaments, which we try to treat absolutely equally. We don't have an absolutely strong focus, and you can argue whether or not it's a downside of Intel Extreme Masters or a benefit, but that offers some limitations that we can't focus as much as we might on, for instance, StarCraft 2 or any other game for that matter. So in Kiev we will probably not do that because it's going to be a very packed schedule, but we do have a lot in store for Brazil, for Sao Paulo, where we will have an amateur League of Legends tournament on the side, kind of, and the main focus will be StarCraft 2. And I'm hoping, we haven't finalized the details yet, but for the Intel Extreme Masters World Championship, you will see something really, really special. It's not going to be 100% focus on the player personalities, per se, but it will certainly add some value, and it will certainly add some player perspective to the general show. I can't speak to the details yet because we haven't finalized them, and then I'm going to be flamed on Reddit and Team Liquid for, you know, lying and deceiving people, but people should be very satisfied with Sao Paulo and Hanover. Kiev, we will simply provide the best possible show.
Hmm. You said that you're not under like any super pressure to like start, I guess, producing giant viewer numbers anytime soon. So like, let's like look beyond March and the the World Championship. Like, what do you have planned out for like the next season, the 2012 season of IEM? What's your goal?
The goal is to continue evolving to make sure that Intel Extreme Masters is one of the most relevant tournaments out there. I don't think it makes sense to necessarily fight in order to be the clear number one in esports. I don't think it gives anyone any particular favors. So we will continue to be what we have been, which is a tournament where pretty much anyone can, with a little bit of investment of their own, anybody can try to become a star. And we will continue to provide the best possible viewer experience for the people without breaking our own philosophy, which is, as I said, give everyone an equal chance to play and compete. The next season should be fairly similar in terms of number of events and prize money to the one that's currently running, but we will have changes in the StarCraft 2 format. I can't speak too much about that yet because we haven't finalized it internally, but people should be really, really happy with the changes to the format. It's not going to be drastic, it's not going to be huge, but I think it's an evolution in the right direction. I'm really sorry I can't give you any strict details on that, but I'm just not ready to talk about it yet.
Do you ever worry that StarCraft 2 as a game, it'll never grow out of the phase where you kind of have to give, like, you know, stars a boost and you kind of have to be focused on, like, the big names and entertainment side, and it'll never really get to the phase of the game where you can be competitive for competitiveness' sake? You think, you know, like, you're obviously more idealistic and you want that to happen, but it's also possible that industry will never, like, become that mature.
That's a very interesting question you're asking. I actually don't know. What we really do need, I've said it before at least once, that we really need to build a system where there is longevity for the game. And longevity for an esports game is only when the new stars that come up are at least as good, if not better, than the ones we had just yesterday or even today. So, you know, when we replace our biggest superstar, it's not because he chose to quit because he got bored of the game or got a girlfriend or whatever, but because there's a 16-year-old kid that, you know, wreaks havoc and makes a bloody mess out of the whole ordeal, knocks the king off his perch, and, you know, starts reigning himself. That's what we need to do. That's what we, you know, that's what I personally am hoping for. And I don't think, in general, as an industry, we're doing enough to provide this stream of young players who are able to dethrone the current big stars. StarCraft II is still on the rise, in my opinion, and it's still kind of with this, with its initial wave, kind of. It's still delivering young up-and-coming players, but it's not actually because the industry is doing something about it, but it's more of a natural process where there are young players who picked up the game and had the natural talent to be just as good. But in 2 years, we, if we didn't have the expansions for StarCraft II, in 2 years we would already see this process going slower and slower and slower. And invitational tournaments aren't helping at all.
But do you think, like, just business-wise, there's much incentive for anyone who, you know, who's in esports to make money to come in and say, oh, you know what, I'm not going to try to, like, have this invitational tournament and invite all these stars and get a ton of viewers. I'm going to invest in these small tournaments for up-and-coming players, like, I don't know, like low Grandmaster players, so they can develop themselves and their skills. Esports, in the end, it has to be a business, and it seems unlikely that people who are in it, look at it as a business and need to make money, are going to finance these events that require, you know, a spirit of altruism to them. Like, what do you think about that?
I think, obviously, you're right. Obviously, Intel Extreme Masters as well has to deliver some kind of result. And it does deliver really decent viewership, to say the least. Just to give you an impression, I think we broke our sessions record for the whole season by 10 times, something like that already. So we really are making major, major leaps forward in terms of Intel Extreme Masters. So, but to answer your question, you just need to find the right balance. I mean, it's certainly possible to have White Rat your event and Stefano and Slayer's Boxer and everyone, but at the same time, somebody like Gatorade, for example, or you know, Illusion, who qualified for Sao Paulo, players like that, I mean, they deserve a chance. And at the end of the day, what are we going to do if we don't have young players and Idraquids? Who are we going to talk about?
Yeah, I suppose that's an interesting question. It's a shame about Gatorade. He actually said he was going to focus on studies in 2012. He was really a really interesting up-and-coming player who has some awesome PBT skills. And yeah, it's kind of a shame, too, because I feel like he said he would try his best, you know, until the end of 2011, but in 2012, unless, you know, I see more tournaments I can compete in and more things for me to do, I'm just going to go start focusing in school again. And I guess the opportunity just wasn't there for him. Okay.
Well, I mean, it's certainly, I would not recommend to anyone to drop school and pursue StarCraft full-time, because we do have a volatile industry and we don't know how long this will last. Maybe for one reason or another, the SOPA bill comes to pass and esports takes, I don't know, 5 years, takes a hit and is basically the clock is reverted for esports 5 years to the past, and then all players are basically kind of left jobless because they don't have a decent stream of income. That could happen. So I would actually still go out there and say, guys, worry about your education first and then worry about pro gaming. So I'm not gonna try to argue with any player that says, hey, I'm gonna worry about my education and then I'm gonna worry about my results.
It's surprising then that, you know how volatile esports can be, and even though you know how volatile it is, you'd rather run IEM in like a more long-term view way instead of like try to make as much money as you can right now.
I mean, hey, at the end of the day, I could try to squeeze out as much as I can out of this, but I really do, as stupid as it sounds and as idealistic as it sounds, I really do love this stuff. So I would like players to have a long-term future in esports, and what can I say? I mean, that's what I would have wanted to have when I was 19. When I was starting my gaming adventure, I wanted to have a possibility of playing for something just more than just, you know, a mouse, a gaming mouse, or an original copy of the game that I was currently playing. So certainly I would like to see, and again, this business, what if we burn StarCraft 2 and then we have to wait another 10 years for another really, really good esports title? What then? How are we going to survive those 10 years? We don't know what next game will come around the corner and save esports. We really, really, really need to make sure that StarCraft 2 and the other games which give promise, that those games stick around for the long term.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some other topics that I guess you've been tweeting about or you've been vocal about in the past. So let's talk casters versus players. I'll just let you start. Do you got anything to say about it?
Yes. Well, one thing is, basically, I have noticed that so far, which is surprising, I guess, it doesn't happen very often in the so-called traditional sports, is that a caster is very often more relevant to the show than the actual, you know, tournament. And there's nothing wrong with commentators being popular, and I actually think that every single bit of attention that the best commentators get out there is 100% completely deserved. Commentators are some of the most hardworking people in the industry. At the same time, I think what we should have is more of the top players actually being personalities that players want to follow. When I hang out with them, when I talk to them face to face with most of the top players, they're actually absolutely amazing characters. When you talk to them, they're funny, they're smart, you know, they're wonderful to be around. It's just the problem is that the regular Team Liquid / Reddit reader doesn't know too much about them and doesn't know how funny, how smart, or how silly, or how peculiar, or whatever these people are. So this puts us in a situation where basically most of the top players are just a nickname and a race to us at the end of the day. So we need to change that to make sure that everybody knows that, you know, everybody knows Whiterad because he's the kindest, most wonderful guy out there who speaks, you know, absolutely broken yet very understandable English and has his special tactics, and everybody loves him. Most of the top players have that kind of a story. It's just that there is no platform where that story is expressed, and that's something that's missing in today's esports landscape, in my opinion.
Don't you think that's kind of strange, though, that in esports, a big part of it is your personality and not just your game? Like, you're a big Liverpool fan, and like, let's take a player like Steven Gerrard. He's like an amazing player, and I like him because he runs hard, he plays hard, and he's like very clutch for his team. But I have no fucking idea about what kind of person he is off the field. And you know, I think for a lot of people who watch like football, that's the way they think so too. Like, he's a great player, and they like him because of that alone. And why is it in esports now that like we're so concerned about, what you know, all this gossip and like these stories outside the game? Well, why can't we just focus on these players' games and what makes them a good player?
I'm not necessarily saying like let's focus on who this or that player screwed at the hotel, at an MLG or at an IEM, whatever, like something like that. No, but we all need heroes in sports for one way or another. You don't always find would you really enjoy a tournament, a Korean tournament, if you didn't know the nicknames of the actual players, but you would just be admiring their gameplay? Probably not as much as if you were actually aware that this is Nesty versus MVP, or you know, Nesty versus Boxer. Right? The same way you want to know something and you want these guys to be in some way relevant and you want to have a reason to cheer for them, right? You might cheer for me in my amateur tournament because I look like Dimaga. But if you don't know about that about me, you have zero feelings about me. You're not even going to be interested in that amateur tournament, for example. So things like that. I mean, everybody will cheer for White Rod because they know who he is and they like him. And it's not necessarily, doesn't necessarily have anything to do or much to do with his in-game performance, because there are many Protoss players who are arguably as good as White Rod. It's just how the world is constructed. People are attracted by personalities, and there's nothing wrong with it. Maybe there is something wrong with it if there's a player who, you know, whose results don't warrant the attention he gets, and then we have a problem. But if there's a pro player with a personality and with decent results, that's the kind of player I want to follow.
Yeah, but you do get the feeling that compared to, you know, other athletic sports, at least there's a, I don't know, there's a little bit disproportionate amount of interest in like the character or personality, which might explain why like the caster is so much more, you know, it's so much more bigger part of esports than it is in regular sports, because we're so obsessed with the personalities in esports.
I think StarCraft rather than esports in general.
That could be part of it too, definitely. I don't know. So if I said casters are overpaid, would you agree?
It really depends. I'm not necessarily going to agree with you, because at the end of the day, you get paid what people are willing to pay for you, right? But I do think that players should be a bigger part of the show, or more of a central part of the show than they are today. We need more interviews with players. We need more focus on the players. But whatever casters make, I'm pretty sure they damn well deserve it.
Okay. Speaking of casters, what do you think of Bitterdam's progress in the last year?
I think they have a fairly decent way to go, but and it's tough for me to judge them because obviously I work with them on a daily basis. But I think they are gelling really nicely, and for the amount of love they have for each other, I think it's hysterically funny whenever people write on comments, "Hey, Mr. Bitter must hate Rotterdam, and Rotterdam probably hates Mr. Bitter," and things like that. It couldn't be farther from the truth. But I have to say, I really enjoy their commentary. I really like what they have to say to each other, and during the game, I mean, what they have to say. And as a StarCraft 2 fan, I have to say that they're one of my favorite commentating couples. And I can name others, by the way, so not to advertise just Bitterdam.
Are you worried that you're going to be like a Korean team? You're going to raise this awesome casting duo, and once they're big, I don't know, some other league's going to swoop in, offer them a ton of money, and you're never going to see them again?
It can happen, but what can I do? I mean, at the end of the day, if that happens, then we will, you know, we will pull up our sleeves, get to work, find another couple, or figure out a way to entertain people during our broadcasts. It's how this life works, right?
Yeah, yeah. You have a TSL jersey. You could be the TSL of casters.
Correct. No, I don't know. I don't know. We'll see what the future brings. I mean, it's not a stable business, esports. People may come and go, and I mean, we'll take a look. Intel Extreme Masters is still a very attractive tournament to commentate in, and certainly one where you can get noticed as a caster, and I think it's done lots for Mr. Bitter, particularly, who hadn't been so well known. Obviously, he would have surfaced one way or another as a top caster, but I think Intel Extreme Masters has helped him rise, and I think it can help rise a couple of other casters as well.
Okay.
But I don't know. I just don't know what to say about this.
All right. So we'll move on to something else then. Here's something I think you tweeted about today, where you said, I think you tweeted the news where you retweeted the article whereas League of Legends now has a larger user base than World of Warcraft, and obviously League of Legends is
free.
I mean, it's probably something you, ever since you included it in IEM, it's just gotten huge, and now it's probably, I would say it's like the main event of IEM now. So what do you think about League of Legends as an esport, and what it's doing for IEM?
I have to say that every publisher should take Riot Games' example and support their games the way they support League of Legends. Seriously, I mean, hey, there's an Intel Extreme Masters event, and you're trying to play League of Legends, and before you actually get a game, you get to see a text that says, hey, Intel Extreme Masters is running right now in Kiev, why don't you click and watch it? Who does that? No one else in the industry does that. So I have to say that basically Riot Games, obviously they're not doing it absolutely perfectly, but still they are a model publisher for esports, and they are fully aware of esports, and they attend every single Intel Extreme Masters event and make sure that it's running. We've had our troubles before with League of Legends in China. The Chinese version wouldn't work correctly. We delayed the tournament, and fantastic people from Riot actually stayed up in Los Angeles and made changes to the game and actually made it work. This is how much they care. And I've worked with several publishers, and I don't mean Blizzard here, but I've worked with several publishers in the past where working with them was much more difficult, and it didn't seem like they cared so much. So I have to say that the publisher is doing loads in order for the game to succeed, and it's really making a difference for Intel Extreme Masters. And I have to say that League of Legends is blossoming as a game. There are more and more stars, more and more big teams out there that are relevant to people, that people want to follow. And that's important, and that's exciting, I think. And that's a really fresh... That's how Team Fnatic rose to be a superpower in esports. Well, there was a new game, and they had success in it. Nobody really believed in that game. They had big success in it, and from that game, they branched out into, you know, being a successful CS team, being a successful StarCraft team, and that's also a fresh start possibility for up-and-coming teams, like maybe CLG, maybe Team Liquid will have a really big professional League of Legends team. I don't know.
Well, so StarCraft 2 fans, the people who will probably be listening to this, StarCraft 2 fans, yeah, they've been known to be a little bit antagonistic toward non-StarCraft games. So, I don't know, what should they feel about League of Legends coming up so big now? Like, should they be worried, or, you know, what should their thought process be, you think?
In general, I mean, the general sentiment around from StarCraft 2 towards other, let's say, MOBA games in general is that this is a newbie game that, you know, you only control one character and things like that. My opinion about it is slightly different. I'll give you a baseball example, which is what I give everyone in this context. I hate baseball. I think it's a senseless sport, but does my opinion count if there are, you know, 50,000 people in the stadium enjoying the game? No, probably not. And the same way with any game, not just League of Legends, any game at all, on a PC or a console, where there's a crowd of people that wants to play the game, there's a crowd of people that wants to watch these guys playing, who's to say that this is not a viable sport? Even World of Tanks scorned pretty much, but you can't deny it. You may or may not know they have millions of players actually in Eastern Europe, and there's a major community out there, and even though it's not a, you know, major international esport, it doesn't make it a non-viable esport. So I don't think StarCraft 2 fans should feel threatened by League of Legends or jealous or whatever. I think they should just focus on their favorite game, and that's it. I mean, if they don't like League of Legends, just ignore it.
Well, the thing I thought about today, because I was reading the news, and I saw, like, OnGameNet, which used to be the which still is the major broadcaster of professional Brood War in South Korea, and is probably, you know, the single entity that did the most for esports in Korea over the last, like, 11 years. They opened their League of Legends League, and their day one show out was, like, a live audience of 1,000 people. League of Legends is doing fantastically well in Korea now. And it's not just the fans who are, you know, going over to that. It's the more fascinating thing is you've seen a few StarCraft II players go over too, I think. Like, there was one guy who used to be playing StarCraft II for StarTale, now he plays League of Legends. And Fruit Dealer, I'm not sure if he's officially changed or anything like that, but he looks like he might, I guess. And
actually, Fruit Dealer was playing every break he got in New York City,
yeah,
at the Global Challenge. Every break he got, he was playing League of Legends.
Yeah. So, I assume there is some, like, you know, skill overlap. So, if you're good at RTS, you can be good at MOBA. So, let's say, you know, a good StarCraft II player could say, you know what, I see more money in League of Legends, and there's some chance that my skill will cross over into League of Legends. At that point, you know, it's entirely feasible. It'll come to a point where, well, not entirely feasible, but, like, hypothetically, there's a situation where two games will be competing for the same player pool for pro gamers, and at that point, you're in direct competition. So what happens then? Have you, like, seen that kind of scenario happen?
I don't think StarCraft II will ever compete with League of Legends directly or with any game which is MOBA. I certainly see a game like League of Legends competing with another game within the same genre, but I don't really think, I mean, the players that want to switch to League of Legends, the games are so different that I do think it's a big risk for a successful StarCraft II player to give up and switch to another game. I think that's what people that start losing at their main game do, switch to other games.
So you don't think there's much, like, overlap in skill set? You think, like, it's a totally different thing?
I mean, there is certainly a big set of skills that you can carry over from one game to another. But I wouldn't really say that being a top StarCraft II player guarantees you being, you know, a superstar in any other game.
Well, I don't know. It feels like I can envision this scenario happening in, like, 2012, like, I don't know, like, third quarter of this year. League of Legends takes off. MLG moves StarCraft II off its main stage and makes League of Legends its main stage game. And there'll be this uproar from fans of people saying, I don't know, people will be complaining about it. I mean, you can see that kind of thing happening?
Not really. Obviously, people will be disappointed because every fan of a certain game is a fan because they love the game and they do believe that their game is superior to others, so they will always be looking at other games as inferior to their favorite game, and based on that they will say, hey, this game doesn't deserve the attention it gets, or why doesn't my game get more attention, or things like that. But I really wouldn't worry about it. I think these two games, StarCraft II and League of Legends, can easily coexist together, and just these two communities should either ignore each other or run along just fine. I mean, yes, it's within the realm of possibility. Do I think it's going to happen? No.
Okay. Well, you're, like, in a unique situation, I guess, where your devotion is to esports, not to a single game, whereas, like, the average fan, you know, their dedication is to a single game and not to this thing called esports as a concept in general. I mean, they might say they're esports fan, but when they say it's esports, they're usually talking about the one game they follow. I mean, it's like, what's your view of StarCraft II? Like, just purely StarCraft II outside of esports, is it a game, like, you feel committed to? Is it a game you really like?
I love it, actually. I love it. This game actually made me forgo my attempt at being absolutely professional at everything I do, and made me not play League of Legends for a very, very long while. And obviously, if I run a League of Legends tournament, I had better know what the hell am I'm doing, right? So actually I went to Platinum League in StarCraft 2. I played a lot and I watched a lot, and my wife actually doesn't really like StarCraft because of me, because I used to talk about it all the time. I used to, you know, make her watch GSL and things like that. So I'm a big fanboy. I'm a really, really big fanboy of StarCraft 2, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, well, I guess it's more of a question about RTS in general. Like, you think... it's really hard to ask someone like what the future of esports is or something like that. But you think like RTS maybe is like the ideal, you know, the ideal platform for esports?
It's tough to say. I mean, there are many different perspectives. It's like comparing apples and oranges, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't say that soccer is so much better than basketball or sprint at the Olympics. It's just, you know, it's just different. And same with different video game genres. Obviously, you know, a game like Quake will be more like boxing, whereas a game like StarCraft will automatically be more like chess, and people will make those comparisons. But I do think it's much easier for the general public to respect the skill of a StarCraft 2 player as opposed to the skill of a Quake player. Simply because the skill of a Quake player seems only physical, where it is, where in StarCraft you do see the mental element, and you can easily grasp the comparison to chess. So it's much easier to respect a StarCraft 2 or an RTS game as opposed to any other, if you're an outsider.
All right. Okay, this next question I kind of have to ask you, because if I don't, people will say I'm throwing you softballs all day and whatever. So, all right, let's talk about the prize payout and the lateness stuff. Just like, mm-hmm. Explain why it might be late, and I guess just explain the process it is for organizer of getting a sponsor, and then getting the money from a sponsor, and then paying it out, and why things might be delayed.
Well, it's certainly not an issue that will go away within a fortnight, if you know what I mean. It's companies which have to balance their books every year will not be able to deal with similar issues within a very short time span. It's certainly something which is regrettable, and it has been a prevalent struggle for esports in general, where companies in esports owed people money, not just prize money, but in general. I've been owed money myself by a former employer of mine. I know how it feels. It sometimes comes from the these hiccups come from all sorts of reasons, and it's not like I'm not trying to dodge the question, but there are really, really a plethora of reasons where prize money could be delayed. For example, a company which is running on investment capital, they're not going to have this problem at all, simply because they're not in the time when their investment is running, they're not dependent on money coming in, whereas other companies might be depending on money coming in, and then they have to basically balance the box all the time. So sometimes it also does happen. This doesn't happen with Intel, just to set the record straight, but it does happen that sponsors basically don't pay at all. Very rarely, but sometimes it happens, or that sponsors pay, that sponsors delay the prize money, things like that.
I mean, is there any hope that... Well, is there any hope that IEM will start paying out, like, in a faster period this year? Because, you know, like, esports teams, they kind of... no one's really affluent in esports except a few people, and, you know, people, they kind of need their money, like, as fast as possible so they can plan their next moves. And if someone says, you know, your money's coming in 6 months, it kind of makes it tough to do business and make investments.
Yeah, sure. And that's a big part of what we want to do, actually, where every single player that attends one of our events is guaranteed to receive prize money as soon as he qualifies, so that he's able to justify going to an event like that somehow, maybe sometimes taking a risk or whatever if he's unknown. Intel Extreme Masters in general pays within 3 months. That's the general rule of thumb that we have in the company. I'm not going to say it's always been 3 months exactly or up to 3 months, but sometimes it has been 2 weeks, sometimes it has been a little more than 3 months. So, I mean, we're working very, very hard towards making this problem go away altogether, but it's not going to go away overnight. It's going to have to be a process, and unfortunately, that's something that people will have to deal with for some time.
I mean, is this something that's always going to exist as long as your current sponsorship structure exists? It's not something you can change around internally, change the way you're financed. It's just something it's built into the way you guys work.
I mean, in order for a project like a major event where you build a major stage and you bring in casters from overseas and, you know, you open up gates for thousands and thousands of people, that's going to cost a lot of money, and you can't do it without sponsorship. You will probably not anytime soon finance esports through, you know, visitor tickets and broadcasting rights. That's not this year, that's not next year. It's a long way forward for the most part. Obviously, there might be some exceptions, but right now, esports is a sponsorship model, and I can assure you most companies, if not every single one, is working towards attaining a really major sponsor that would support them in the long run.
All right. I mean, I guess Intel is not really the kind of sponsor you can say, hey, we need money now, pay up. So, all right.
Okay. Intel pays regularly.
Okay. Yeah, but like not on like demand. Well, anyway, we're...
No. Intel has budgets.
Yeah.
Which are and sums of money which are freed up quarterly. Mm-hmm. So Intel pays us quarterly, which is one of the reasons, for example, if we have an event at the end of the quarter, then the money might be paid out in the next quarter, for example, things like that. So, mm-hmm. But they certainly don't give us money. I don't call Intel and say, hey, look, give me $100,000 tomorrow.
Yeah,
it doesn't work this way, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, all right, I guess we'll wrap up. And to wrap up, we'll go back to IEM Kiev again, which is actually the reason we're talking to you in the first place. So, okay, your top four, predict.
I'm not supposed to.
Oh, you're not supposed
Certainly
to?
Certainly not, but...
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a suit that runs the tournament, and you wouldn't see, you know, the commissioner or NBA predicting the finals, right, in the playoffs. But, hey... Mm. Screw that.
Yeah, of course.
Let's see. Top four. It's gonna be MMA.
Mm-hmm.
MMA. Naniwa, Dimaga, and Xenia.
Ooh, that's interesting. That's actually very close to what I thought. But you don't believe in Hero after Home Story Cup?
Not really. I just go by hunches. Look, man, you're asking me tough questions. I don't really. I'm a Platinum League player. What do I know about StarCraft, man?
That's all right then. So, who are you rooting for?
Who am I rooting for? That's an even funnier question. I'm not supposed to say, but I'm going to say Dimaga nonetheless because he's my doppelganger.
Yeah, it's interesting how that only came about recently after you shaved your head. When you used to have hair, yeah, we wouldn't have said that, but now it's the resemblance is uncanny.
Don't give me that. Seriously.
Okay.
I don't see it. I honestly don't see it. There may be a couple of angles from which, although I do have to say I saw myself on a screen of Home Story Cup and I thought it was Dimaga, so Yeah, okay. I'll give you some credit, but I've been shaving my head before most Intel Extreme Masters events for kind of like a lucky charm type of thing. So, yeah, well, doesn't really matter. Dimaga it is.
I feel like you guys should do something where Usat interviews fake Dimaga, and that would work out well because you could play both parts. That would be kind of hard.
I we've done things like that in Intel Extreme Masters with James Turgot Harding, actually, some tournament previews and things like that, where he was talking to himself, actually, and arguing with himself, sitting on the couch across. So we've done that already, but I can't say I wasn't tempted to record a video as the MAGA to try and entice people to watch the Intel Extreme Masters Kiev tournament.
All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap up then. Well, at this point, if you were a player, I'd ask you for the sponsor spiel and all that stuff you have to do when you're a player. But you're a tournament organizer, so you can say whatever you want. Just end on, say whatever you want to end.
I'm just gonna say, if you like Intel Extreme Masters at all, if you like our philosophy, cheer for us. Talk to people on Reddit, Team Liquid, about that. Tell them there is a stream up. If you don't like it, tell me on Twitter or on Facebook. I am MB Carmack on Twitter. I would very gladly hear people's opinions about Intel Extreme Masters.
All right,
that's only going to make the tournament better.
All right, man. Thanks for coming on. We're looking forward to the tournament. I hope it's going to be great.
Thank you. I hope so.
All right. Thanks.